This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tine. Thanks so much for tuning in today. For the past several days on Project Milwaukee Southern Connections, we've been looking at opportunities seized and missed when it comes to developing the region south of Milwaukee to the Illinois border. We've talked about what plans for economic development have been devised and how transportation links help and hinder these efforts. But how these ideas are implemented and translated into actual bricks and mortar is another story. Competing municipal interests, business and residential development, and open space and environment all must be balanced to create a viable, sustainable community. And then you have to multiply that dozens of times across the region. For the big picture analysis, we turn to Dr. Julio Rivera, provost and chair of the geography department at Carthage College in Kenosha. Not only does he observe the cross-boundary interactions between southeast Wisconsin and northern Illinois on a daily basis, but he also studies how communities are developed. He tells Lake Effect Stephanie Lecce more about how this process actually works.
Everyone loves the notion that someone will all of a sudden decide to locate a factory here, and because they've fallen in love with southeast Wisconsin, you know, that's a great story, and we all love that. But to be honest, it's a more sustained, serious effort. You need to have a group of public officials, private businesses, and non-governmental organizations working together to form that. So in southeast Wisconsin, we have the Milwaukee 7. You have the Milwaukee Metropolitan Chamber of Commerce. You have the Kenosha Area Business Alliance. You have the Racine Economic Development Commission. These are people and groups that actively work to promote economic development, actually bring these businesses in, or more importantly, sustain the jobs that are currently here.
Which do you need to have first? Do you need to have the people, or do you need to have the businesses located in an area for development to occur?
Chicken and egg is exactly the way to describe that, because one of the things is, how do you draw people into a space? Well, you need, you know, business and retail and all of that. Well, how do you develop business and retail? You need so it really is a combination of those kinds of things. But think about Milwaukee for a minute. And I was an undergraduate in Milwaukee in the late 1970s, so I've seen downtown Milwaukee as it was then. Places like the Third Ward, Water Street, and a number of the things that we take for granted, even the Summerfest grounds, which were in existence but were nowhere near what they are now, have transformed the city in ways that I think in the late 70s a lot of people would have been skeptical about. And it is that combination of private interest, government, as well as non-governmental organizations that really have transformed downtown Milwaukee.
What have been the biggest challenges then growing south of Milwaukee County? Have these efforts been less successful than those maybe of Chicago growing north?
I would classify them more successful or less successful, but clearly Chicago growing north has had a huge impact on southeast Wisconsin. I live and work in Kenosha. I've lived in Kenosha for about a year now. I lived in Milwaukee up until last year, but I've worked in Kenosha for 14 years. In that time, one of the things that I know is that we are part of Illinois as much as we're part of Wisconsin. One of the things to remember about Chicago growing north is that's a good thing, as well as Milwaukee growing south, that's a good thing. In geography, we talk often about something called a functional region. Milwaukee and Chicago essentially are a functional region. This corridor is a functional region. And the border that rests, and we call the Illinois-Wisconsin border, is far less important than the connections within that region.
Well, do you think that this idea of the megalopolis developing between Chicago and Milwaukee is actually a legitimate idea, that could in fact happen years ahead?
Well, I shy away from that term because it's flashy and all that it brings. I prefer to think about it as a functional region rather than a megalopolis, because megalopolis almost sounds like we're going to be this nasty, crowded, urban, you know, city forever. You know, one of the things about a good functional region is that you have open space, you have urban space, you have neighborhoods, you have industrial spaces, you have a combination of these things. And it's not that it's this one massive thing, but it's a diversity of kinds of places within a larger region that functions.
What are the advantages that our functional region has, and where are areas where maybe we're not quite so functional yet?
Let me start on the not functional. And I think one of the things that very clearly is the case is that we tend to think in counties. We tend to think in municipalities. We tend to think about Illinois being different than Wisconsin and that border being something more of a wall than a border. That's one of our real weaknesses. It is what other regions have been able to do. If you think about the Research Triangle in North Carolina, if you think about the Maricopa County Association of Governments in Arizona, these are groups that see themselves as a larger regional group that is very highly functional. The Milwaukee 7 has the potential to change that and certainly has been working very hard at that. We'll see how that plays out over time.
I mean, is there something to be said for having that wall, if you will, when we get to the Illinois border, that there are certain interests that Milwaukee and this region south that they have to protect from encroachment, if you will, from Chicago?
Well, you know, and we could have a lot of fun telling stories about that in different ways at the moment. And so I won't go there. But I'm not necessarily sure we need to protect something. I think one of the things about living and working in Kenosha as long as I have is the border is far less real there than it is from living in Milwaukee. And there is much more interplay between Kenosha and Illinois than I think people in Milwaukee realize. And so when you deal with real people who commute back and forth, when you deal with the money that transfers back and forth as a result of that, the fact that the largest Kenosha employer is Abbott Laboratories, which is across the border in Illinois, you start thinking about this and you start thinking that that border really doesn't matter as much as the movement of people and money that really happens.
When it comes to developing a region like ours that, for all intents and purposes, is pretty sparsely populated still, is part of the appeal the ability to maintain those open spaces? And then how do you balance that with wanting to increase and encourage development in those very open spaces?
You know, one of the things is that any good community, and Milwaukee County is a good example of a community that's been able to maintain development and open spaces. We have a lot of parks in Milwaukee County. This is clearly one of the real gems of the county. The same is true when you look at a regional plan and you look at planning a larger region. There is good development and there is less than good development. And if you bring in someone and you plop down a business or a retail store and it brings in jobs and creates a parking lot, that does some things that are good, and that's better. If you can plan a community or the type of retail or industrial or office space that includes residential space, includes park space, and allows for a particular kind of development that is both open and functional, that's a stronger kind of development in a number of ways because it also creates sub-interconnections within a smaller community.
Well, let me ask about the role of urban and suburban sprawl in terms of developing a broader region or a functional region, as you described.
I spent a year at Arizona State looking at this and on my sabbatical a few years ago. And you know, if you wanted to go where sprawl was, you know, in the mid-2000s, Phoenix was the place to go. So I went there. And one of the things that you have to think about with sprawl is the question that population is likely to grow in this region. We are likely to have more people than we used to. We are going to need to find places to put them. We are going to need to find places to put businesses and so forth. And how we decide to do that is probably the most important decision. They're coming. And so the question is, how do we develop our space? And we have a variety of models to look at. And if you think about suburbs, and part of the reason that I love to research suburbs is that there's a great diversity and richness about the kinds of suburbs, depending on when they were built, the 20s, the 30s, the 50s, the 60s, you know, if they were built in the last 10 years. We have a lot of different models to choose from. What kinds of functions do you want this suburb to have? And then how do you build out? I think if you ask people, what kinds of communities do you want to live in? What are the characteristics of the community? In other words, do you want personal interaction with people? Do you want to be able to walk to the grocery store? Do you want to be able to have your children walk to school? you choose one kind of community. If your personal choice is, you know, I'd really rather not know my neighbors, I'd really rather have them at least, you know, 1,000 yards from me, you design a different kind of community. I want to live on a golf course, you design a different kind of community. These are all real choices that people make and real desires that they have, and they demand different designs. An interesting question is that there was a community in Arizona that was planning a build-out. They were a community of 10,000. In 20 years, they expect to be a community of 90,000. So they said, what do we want to do? And they created a master plan to address that. Those are the types of long-term questions that any community needs to begin to ask, whether it's at a county level, or regional level, or at a city level.
Well, what lessons can we take from what you observed in Arizona in terms of what maybe not to do?
Well, I think there's an assumption that there's a single correct way to develop. And that's a bad assumption, because people choose and want different things in their own communities. And if you talk to people about how they like to live, there are a whole variety of things. So a single form of development probably isn't the choice. But creating a variety of kinds of communities where people have different kinds of amenities available to them, as well as communities that are fundamentally connected to good transportation, to good schools, there are models that I think we have that work very well in Southeast Wisconsin. I think there are some that probably are less so. I think we need to think about bigger parcels of land. So if someone has 40 acres, should you build, you know, 20 unconnected houses on it? Probably not your best model, but some people will want to live there still. If you can gather a parcel of 400 to 800 acres together and create a different kind of community, that might be a better model.
Well, how do we do all of this sustainably? It's easy to have one plan in place, but then once that particular area is developed out and grown out to capacity, then what do you do? I mean, how do you think in terms of adaptability for the future?
That's the tough question, and I think that's the question that we're asking now. And some communities have readapted themselves. I think if you look at a lot of communities in Southeast Wisconsin that are a century old, they are still thriving and they have readapted and repurposed themselves. And there are communities that are 30 to 40 years old that are really struggling with that question. And, you know, how do you predict the future is really what you're asking. And it's almost impossible to predict the future, but make your best choices.
Great. Well, Dr. Julio Rivera, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Julio Rivera is provost at Carthage College in Kenosha. He's the chair of the geography department and also teaches earth science and runs the Geographic Information Systems Lab. His research looks at the development of suburban communities and urban planning. He spoke with Stephanie Lecce. We'll take a quick break then, start a discussion of the role culture plays in regional growth next on Lake Effect.